Trib Live Radio presents Panther Lair, hosted by Pitt insider Chris Peek of PantherLair.com. A full hour of Pitt football, basketball, and recruiting talk. Trib Total Media, see what's next. Now, here's your host, Chris Peek.
Welcome into the Panther Lair post-game Trib Live Radio. Chris Peek, publisher of PantherLair.com. You know the website, and you know what we do here every week. Get together on Monday mornings, 9 a.m., to talk about the most recent Pitt game. We have our Panther Lair show on Thursday afternoons, and we have the Panther Lair post game here on Monday mornings. While everyone else is talking about everything else, we give you an hour of all Pitt sports talk here on Trib Live Radio. And recapping Pitt's win over Virginia at Heinz Field on Saturday, 26-19, you know kind of all the basic storylines. Pitt improves to 4-1 overall, 2-0 in the ACC. Defense, offense, you know what to think about each of those things because you watch the game and you kind of know what happened with each of those things. But I've got a lot to say about them as we break down this game. A lot of thoughts, a lot of numbers, a lot of things to go over. And we're going to do it all this week. We've got our good, the bad, and the ugly. We've got our three key stats. I got some sound for you from post game. Nate Peterman and Matt Galambos both had some interesting things to say that I think you'll want to hear, and I certainly want to play for you, and I want you to listen to. But we have to start, and I hate to start here because this isn't what I want to talk about, at least initially, or really what I want to spend too much time on with this whole show. I don't really want to waste too much time because that's what I think it is. But I just kind of want to get it off my chest, get it out of the way, and then we can move on to actually talking about the game. And this thing that's kind of weighing on me is attendance. And I hate talking about attendance. I hate ragging on attendance. I hate talking about attendance. I hate listening to people talk about attendance. And a couple of weeks ago, there was way too much talk in this town about attendance. And it got so annoying. I hated listening to people prattle on about it. Shut up. People are going to go to games or they're not going to go to games. And it really shouldn't bother you all that much. And to tell you the truth, it really doesn't bother me all that much. If you want to go to the Pitt game, go. If you don't want to go to the Pitt game, don't go. I'm still going to go. I'm still going to do my job. It doesn't really change anything for me. Now, that being said, I'm not bothered by it, but I'm a little bit confused. And I don't really get it because I look at this team coming off the Virginia Tech win, a good win on the road in conference. I look at a team that's surging, that's playing much better on one side of the ball than anyone expected it to, and still showing a lot of signs of promise on the other side of the ball where people expected there to be good things happening. And they're coming off this really good win against a road, or against an ACC opponent, traditionally a good one, on the road, and they come home for homecoming for another ACC game with a beautiful Saturday afternoon. The weather was just perfect. And the announced attendance is 45,000. And all I can think about is how 2 years ago, they went down and beat Duke 58-55. James Conner looks awesome. Tyler Boyd looks awesome. Devin Street looks awesome. Tom Savage looks awesome. This offense just looks unstoppable. Defense had a rough game. They gave up 55 points, but they also had four interceptions. The team looked exciting. They had the rough. They got beat by Florida State in the season opener, but then they beat New Mexico at home, and they went down to Duke and won their first road ACC game and did it by scoring a ton of points, and that's what everybody likes to see, right? And they came home the next week, and they played Virginia for homecoming of all teams. I mean, the same situation as this past weekend. And it was a beautiful Saturday afternoon. I can still remember standing on the sideline saying, God, this is just a perfect day for an early fall football game. And if you're a Pitt fan, I don't know where else you would want to be than this. And the announced attendance that day was 48,000. They couldn't top 50,000 that day, and they couldn't top 50,000 on Saturday against Virginia in 2015. And I don't get it. And again, I'm not bothered by it, and I'm not criticizing you if you don't go. I'm more just asking you, why didn't you go? Because I'm confused by it. I don't understand what else you might be looking for in this situation. You want to say, well, it should be a marquee opponent. They should schedule better home games. Well, this was a conference game. You don't really have a lot of control over that. The teams that are in your conference, and you got to play them. So that reasoning doesn't really resonate for me. And you know what? It's a conference game. So it is kind of important. No matter who you're playing, a conference game is important, particularly when you're 1-0 in the conference, as they were coming into this past weekend, or 1-1, as they were two years ago coming into the homecoming game against Virginia. And they say, well, people have a lot of things going on. Their kids have soccer on Saturday mornings or whatever. And that's fine. But I mean, don't people around the country have kids with things going on Saturday mornings? And other schools around the country still manage to draw a lot of fans to their games. You say, well, there's Steelers and there's Penguins and Pirates and it's a pro town and that's where all the attention is. And I understand that. And believe me, I'm not expecting 65,000, but you couldn't draw at least, you couldn't break 50. There aren't 50,000 people who want to watch this team play or aren't interested enough to pay the relatively, I mean, let's be honest, modest amount it costs to go to a Pitt football game. And again, I'm not admonishing you if you didn't go. I really don't care. It's no skin off my back. I'm not bothered by it. I just don't understand. I'm just confused by it. That's what it comes down to. You spend your money however you want to spend it. I'm not going to tell you how to spend your money. I don't want you to tell me how to spend my money. But what's the... I just don't get it. I don't get the reasoning. I don't get the rationale. And I hear all the excuses, and the excuses are fine. You know, if they're legitimate excuses, if you legitimately had something else to do, that's fine. But I just don't get it. I don't understand what else Pitt fans are looking for. Well, they want a winner. Well, this team was 3-1 coming into this game with the potential to go 4-1 for the first time in 6 years. You know, your definition of what a winner is, if you're following Pitt football, is probably a little bit different than maybe some other schools in the country. And at this point, a team being 4-1 or even having the potential to be 4-1 is kind of a winner when it comes to Pitt, right? And that's not a knock on Pitt. That's just a realistic assessment of where they are and where they've been. So I don't understand. Marquee players, you've got Tyler Boyd, who is, I mean, as surefire an NFL star as Pitt has had in a few years. You've got a defense that's pretty exciting. And again, I mean, no matter what I say about this, it's going to come back to me sounding like either I'm annoyed by it, by people not showing up for this game, or it's going to sound like I'm trying to convince people to go to the game. And one, I'm not annoyed by it. I'm really not. And two, I'm not going to try and convince you to come to the game because it's not me trying to sell tickets. It's not my job to try to sell tickets. And it's not my interest to try and sell tickets. I'm trying to sell subscriptions to my website. That's what I need to do. That's what I'm trying to do. And you going to the game or not going to the game isn't going to affect that one bit because we don't have any in-stadium advertising or anything like that. It's just more, I just don't understand. I get that you want the football program to prove something to you. But to me, I think, you know, do you need to wait until they prove it? Or do you want to be there along the way as you go through the proving process, as it were? I don't know. Everybody's got their own thing. Everybody's got their own reasons for doing whatever they do. I'm just curious about that one. So if you end up listening to this podcast and you find me on Twitter at Panther Lair, PANTHERLAIR, and you didn't go to the game and you feel like responding to this, by all means, tweet to me or email me or post on the message boards and say, hey, Chris, you know, shut up. This is why I didn't go to the game. It's a perfectly legitimate reason and you're an idiot for even questioning it, which, again, I'm not questioning. I'm really not questioning. I'm not giving you a hard time about it. You did whatever you wanted to do on Saturday. That's fine. I'm just curious why what you wanted to do wasn't go to the game. That's all. So now that I got that out of my system, now that we got that out of the way, because I walked out of the game, I'm like, they usually announce the attendance in the press box. They didn't announce it this time. And it never really occurs to me during the game, hey, they haven't announced attendance yet. But then I'm walking out of the game and I'm like, wait, they never said what the attendance was. So I flip through the game notes and I see, I'm looking through right here, 45,237 at Heinz Field. The weather at kickoff, by the way, in case you were curious, 56 degrees. So not hot, but the weather was sunny. Wind only 4 miles an hour. Either out of the northeast or going northeast. I'm not a meteorologist. I'm a recruiting writer, for Pete's sake. It was a beautiful day. It was a beautiful day, and people didn't show up. The ones who showed up, though, and we'll end this on a positive note before we get into the game itself. The ones who showed up, you know, what do the kids say? Mad props to you. The kids in 2002 would say mad props to you. You get credit not for being there, but for being there and being loud and staying the whole game. The students, a solid majority, stayed for the entire game. There was no mass exodus at the end of the third quarter like there was in the Youngstown State game. Students stayed. The 45,000 who were there, a whole bunch of them stayed till the end, and they were loud till the end in a game where they needed to be loud till the end. I mean, there was a safety in the fourth quarter that I think was directly impacted by the crowd. It was at that closed end of the end zone. You know, on the snap before, you know, when they lined up to run the 3rd and 9 from their own 2, Virginia called a timeout because of the noise. I mean, when was the last time you can remember Heinz Field causing a team to call a timeout because of the noise? First of all, the building's almost sort of not built very well for that kind of thing to happen. Second of all, Pitt games don't usually get that crowded or that rowdy to cause that kind of thing to happen. But it did on Saturday against Virginia. And Virginia calls a timeout on 3rd and 9 from the 2. And the next play, Mike Caprera, who we're going to talk about quite a bit, Mike Caprera gets in there, sacks Matt Johns in the end zone for a safety that those points came in pretty handy. Those points came in pretty handy, made the game 26-13. We know what happened after that, and we'll certainly talk about it a lot as we go through this show. So that's my thought on attendance. Props to the people who were there, who were loud. Good job by you. And those who didn't show up, I'm just curious. I'm just curious what the rationale was. So let me know. Anyway, this is the Panther Alert postgame here, Triple Live Radio, Chris Peek, publisher of PantherAlert.com. As we do every week, we break down the most recent Pitt game. This was a 26-19 win over Virginia. Some pretty notable things to come out of this game. Pitt 4-1 on the season, first time at 4-1 since 2009, just the sixth time in the last 24 seasons that they have started a season with a 4-1 record. They've never started 5-0. They haven't started 5-0 in a long time. Certainly not in those 24 seasons. The best record over five games in those last 24 seasons has been 4-1, which they have now done six times total in 24 seasons. 2-0 in the ACC for the first time ever. They've actually never won more than, I know that's only the last 2 years that they've been in the ACC, but they've never won more than two ACC games in a row. Paul Chryst did it once in each of the last two seasons, won back-to-back ACC games, finished last season with back-to-back wins in the ACC. So I guess technically Pitt as a school, year-to-year, is on a four-game ACC winning streak. So you got that going for you. That's nice, right? How about that? But as I say, 2-0 for the first time. Lost my train of thought with that dumb joke about going four games in a row. 2-0 in the ACC. Good place to be. 4-1. The best five-game record by a Pitt head coach in his debut since 1982 when Foge Fazio opened the season 5-0. Eventually got to 7-0. But when you're talking about a five-game record, Pat Narduzzi 4-1 in his first five games as Pitt's head coach. The best five-game record in a Pitt head coach's debut in 33 years. So that's pretty good, right? sometimes when you have these numbers about Pitt and records and success qualifiers and quantifiers, you can almost drive yourself batty with how far back you can dig to find the last thing something, in even a mild extreme of positivity happened. Something like going 4-1. The fact that you have to go 6 years to find the last time Pitt started a season 4-1. It's pretty remarkable. And, that 6 4-1 starts in the last 24 seasons. That's pretty remarkable. That tells you a little something about where this program has been, what they've been doing. And hey, maybe that ties into the attendance thing I opened up this show talking about. But we're not going to go back to that. We're going to focus on this game. So as we look at it, again, same story that we saw last week at Virginia Tech. The defense closed it out. The offense in this one, actually in both games, started off really strong, scored a couple times in the first quarter, looked like it was going to be a blowout. I mean, it's 17-3 at the end of the first quarter. You're thinking Pitt is going to roll. Obviously, they only ended up with 9 more points, a touchdown and a safety over the ensuing three quarters. But what you see again, and this is the kind of the biggest thing I came out of this game thinking, right? Because I came out of the Virginia Tech game thinking, boy, this defense is really special. They did a great job closing that game out. And you had that same thought after the Virginia game, but now the focus was on the offense. And while the offense couldn't do its part in the fourth quarter, because you now have two games in a row where you get into the fourth quarter and Pitt's offense has a chance to close the game, to shut it down, and they can't do it. And they give the ball back to the opponent, and the defense has to step up. I mean, Pat Narduzzi was asked after the game about winning games with defense. He said, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to do that every week. I would like us to have some games where our offense puts it away and keeps the defense on the sidelines. And while we're all impressed with what the defense has done, I mean, you look down this fourth quarter, and the defense was a little bit more porous in this fourth quarter against Virginia than they were against Virginia Tech. I mean, Virginia Tech, the fourth quarter for the defense was a thing of beauty. I mean, really, they give up a handful of yards for a field goal to start the fourth quarter. Then the next time the defense comes on the field, they get an interception in one play. Then they force a 3-and-out with a sack. And then they force a 4-and-out with 2 sacks. which ends with an interception on fourth down to basically end the game at Virginia Tech. This week, a little bit rougher time. They give up a six-play, 66-yard drive that makes it a one-score game, 26-19, with 5:50 to go against Virginia. And this is where the offense needed to do its part. This is where the offense needed to win the game and put the game away. They come out. Pitt's got the ball at its own 17 with 5 minutes and 50 seconds to go. That's not ideal. You know, it's not ideal to have the ball at your own 17. You're kind of backed up there. But you got to do something. I mean, you've got to move the ball. And they went 3 and out. They ran the ball with Quadri Olison for 3 yards, threw a 4-yard pass to Tyler Boyd, and then Peterman basically scrambled for a yard to the 25. And they go 3 and out, and they have to punt on 4th and 2 from the 25. And Virginia, trailing by a touchdown, gets the ball with 3:44 to go at their own 28. And the defense has to step up. The defense has to make a play. The defense has to win a game again. Now, you can rely on a unit. I mean, yes, it's incumbent on the defense in that situation to make a play. But the offense needs to do its part. And you saw the same thing at Virginia Tech a week earlier. I mean, it's a 17-13 game. After Virginia Tech kicks a field goal, Pitt gets the ball back with 13:20 to go at their own 25. They do drive. They did drive a little bit here. They took 6 minutes off the clock, which is what you want to do. You want to take some time off it. But they only gained 39 yards in 10 plays. They take 6 minutes off, so that's good. But they only go 39 yards. Getting some more points, getting another field goal to make it a touchdown game, a game where a touchdown only ties and doesn't win for Virginia Tech, would have been ideal. But they couldn't even get into field goal range. They got to the 36. Then the next time, now this is where you really need to do it. I mean, you've got the ball at the Virginia Tech 25. Oh, this was the situation right after the interception. 6:52 to go. They end up settling for a field goal, but the field goal attempt got blocked. You know, that's, I guess you want to be conservative there, try and run some time off the clock. They ran 4 plays and gained 1 yard for 2.5 minutes. The next one, though, after Pitt's defense, this is Virginia Tech here, after Pitt's defense forces a 3-and-out, the Pitt offense comes on the field with 4:20 to go in the game at their own 41. This is where Virginia Tech should never see the ball again. Just like when they take the ball at their own 17 with 5:50 to go against Virginia, the Cavaliers should never see the ball again with more than 20 seconds left on the clock, or maybe 30 seconds. Never see the ball again. Virginia Tech should have never seen the ball again after Pitt took over with 4:20 to go at their own 41. But instead, Quadri Olison rush up the middle for no gain. Virginia Tech calls a timeout. Olison runs for 2 yards. Virginia Tech calls a timeout. Nate Peterman gets sacked for 8 yards. And Ryan Winslow ends up punting. 3 plays, minus 6 yards, 55 seconds off the clock. That's not good enough. It's not good enough. You're in a situation where you need to be able to win the game, and that's not good enough. Now, this is not to distract from the fact that Pitt's defense has played really well in the last 2 games, that they absolutely locked down a Virginia Tech in the fourth quarter, and they did enough in the fourth quarter against Virginia, even though they gave up a touchdown and looked like they were going to give up a drive that was marching, certainly got into Pitt territory, crossed midfield at the end of the game against Virginia. They still stepped up and made enough plays to win that game. And credit to them. They deserve a lot of credit. But you know what? We spent all last week giving them credit. This week, a little bit of that onus has to fall on the offense. And Pat Narduzzi said it after the game. Nate Peterman said it after the game. They said, look, the offense has to do better. We have to do better. Peterman said we have to do better in the 4-minute drill. As a matter of fact, let's listen to Nate Peterman. Here's his comments after the game. He spoke to the media. And, you know, it's hard to ask a guy after a win, why'd you guys play so bad? Or did you feel like you played well enough? Or do you think you did enough to win? I mean, they did. They did enough to win. They scored 24 points on offense, plus the safety to make it 26. They did enough to win, technically. But they probably could have done more to make it a little bit more comfortable. So here's Nate Peterman from after the game on Saturday at Heinz Field.
Yeah, we definitely wanted to start fast, and we did a good job of that. But when a little bit of adversity hits, we just need to get better and kind of grind through that a little bit. And, you know, we had big plays, but just some fluke things happening on the goal line and things like that. But I thought we showed a lot of potential and know that we have to get a lot better, but it's good to have a win and know that we need to get a lot better.
Week by week, you seem to get a lot more comfortable, it seems, in the offense. for reads and everything. Is it coming a lot easier to you now?
I think so, but I think it's huge. You know, I know a lot of my passes, I'm sitting back there with a lot of time. And to have that, to have the great O-line that we do is huge, and can't say enough about them.
With Tyler getting bracketed, is it nice having those three experienced tight ends in the row?
Definitely, and I thought they all did a great job today. Scotty making a lot of plays, JP making a lot of plays as always, and it's huge to have them step up.
Is finishing games, is that kind of the next step for you guys? Is that the kind of next thing you need to focus on, work on?
Yes, sir, absolutely. I think that's a great point. And really, as an offense, we keep hammering this, that we've got to be better in four-minute offense. I mean, our defense is doing a great job in those two-minute drills of getting off the field and, you know, making the plays there at the end. But we can't put them in that situation. They played a great game, but we need to go ahead and grind out the game and just get better from that.
Yes, man. Are you at a point now where you kind of have a feel for Tyler that you can sort of put a pass up like you did for the touchdown, that there's probably a better than even chance he's going to come down with it?
Definitely, and really, I mean, that play kind of wasn't even designed for him. It just happened that way, but I kind of knew with having him out there, I was going to put it up where either he was going to get it or nobody was going to get it. And luckily, when you have a playmaker like that out there, he wants to make that play, and he did, so it was great.
They bring in Chad to run essentially, but it seemed like you got loose a couple times.
Yeah, just kind of how it played out today, and you know, kind of I guess it didn't even exist with the holding penalty, but it was nice to do that. I think Chad continues to do great when he comes in there playing his role, and really being very supportive of me also, and just a great guy. I can't say enough about Chad.
Do you think you guys had a couple kind of errant snaps today? Is it just sort of fluky plays, or what
do you kind of put that to? Definitely. I mean, kind of uncharacteristic of Artie, but I know we're going to get a lot better in that. And yeah, just very uncharacteristic of Artie, so I know it's kind of very fluke, and I doubt it'll happen again.
Were you surprised there was no flag after, I think it was the second one where you went back and recovered the fumble? Were you surprised there wasn't a flag?
A little surprised, a little frustrated, but, you know, just glad we got the win. Great team win. Defense did a great job, and we got to keep getting better.
There's a couple of huge spells there of adversity. You guys had to suffer through a couple of fumbles and things. How does a team able to do that, to stay calm and get things done?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things we talked about this week. Kind of Coach Narduzzi went through the keys to winning, and you know, one of them was overcoming adversity, and we got to do a better job of that. I thought we did enough to win, obviously, but we can be so much better, I think, than what we were today. And I think everybody's kind of realizing that, and realizing that this offense can be as good as it wants to be if we just really buy in and keep getting better throughout the week.
In terms of student fan support, did you notice the difference between the Youngstown State game and today?
To be honest, I love the fans, and it was great to have them out there. Kind of just focused on the field and things, but I thought they, in the fourth quarter, I could definitely notice they were there with the defense, and I think they really helped him out, giving him some juice there.
Can you talk about that turnover at the end of the TD?
Yes, sir. You know, I was very, very frustrated. What's that?
What were you thinking? No, I absolutely.
Yeah, just very frustrated. Wanted to take a shot downfield and then saw it wasn't open, so tried to pull it back. And, you know, I need to do a better job holding on to the ball. And those things can't happen when your defense is playing that great. And, you know, we're kind of moving on offense, just need to secure the ball.
Is that play as hectic down on the field as it looked from us up there? I mean, it was sort of tough to tell if it was a fumble or if it was sort of crazy play.
Right. I was a little surprised. I honestly didn't feel that pressure. We were just trying to take the ball back, but, you know, just need to do a better job holding on the ball and putting us in better situations.
You talked to coach after that play, or did you try to avoid everybody after something like that happens?
Oh, no. Chaney definitely found me, made sure to know we need to secure the football. And, you know, I take responsibility for that. And so I will, and I'll get better and, you know, go for no turnovers next week.
What's he like when he's telling you, you know, what you did wrong?
A little animated, a little frustrated, but, you know, that's just part of the game, part of the passion of the game and the heat of the moment, and I just got to get over it and be better next time.
You had some big plays at the tight ends early on. Did that, and then it looked like either did you guys get away from it or did they adjust so that it opened things up for other guys?
I think some of the things were opened up to other guys. I thought I missed a few reads, honestly, to them, where they should have probably gotten the ball a couple more times. So we'll go back and correct those things. I thought they did a great job coming out. Really, really good to have them making plays in the offense.
And then after the interception, you guys get the ball at the 20 and you run for a first down. And then with that hurry-up thing, was that Was that designed, or was that a result of after you ran and then you wanted to get off another play real quick?
It was designed, yeah. We going into that drive, he kind of told me that we were going to do that. And just great that Tyler went up and made a play, and it's great to have playmakers like that on the outside.
And it wasn't too bad of a catch, huh?
No, a great catch, unbelievable catch, really.
So, yeah, that catch by Tyler Boyd was pretty incredible. There's no question about that. I mean, I don't think anyone would deny he had a pretty amazing catch on that touchdown. But more to the point, Peterman, first of all, is right on when he says that they have to get better at the four-minute drill. They've got to do better at those kind of drives that I was talking about before we listened to that soundbite from Nate Peterman after the win over Virginia. I mean, they've got to get better in the fourth quarter when they've got a lead, and they can hold the lead if they just hold the ball and run time off the clock and get a few first downs, whether it's running or throwing. You don't have to just do it with the run. If you have James Conner, then yeah, maybe you can do it with the run. But you don't have James Conner right now. And Quadri Olsen looks nice, and Chris James had a good game on Saturday, and we can talk about him in a little bit. But whatever it takes, whether it's throwing or running, you've got to be able to move the chains. You've got to pick up a couple first downs. You've got to run time off that clock. And they haven't been able to do it in either of the last two games. And the funny thing is, you know, when we talked to Nate Peterman, and I asked him about those end-of-game situations, and we talked to Pat Narduzzi, and he talked about some of those things as well. They talk about adversity and then dealing with adversity and handling adversity. And kind of the funny thing to me is it's kind of the opposite of adversity. They're not facing adversity. They have to deal with comfort. They have to protect a lead. Protecting a lead is not adversity. It's just about stepping up and making plays. It's not like, you know who has to deal with adversity? Pitt's defense has to deal with adversity. That's who's got to deal with adversity, not the offense. The offense doesn't need to get better at dealing with adversity. The defense is the one that has had to deal with adversity, and they've done a pretty good job. They've acquitted themselves nicely when it comes to dealing with adversity. It's the offense that has not been able to deal with adversity very well. Or it's the offense that they haven't really had to deal with adversity. You know, what they really need to do, what they've been asked to do, what their biggest task right now is protecting a lead, which is not dealing with adversity. It's dealing with that comfort, playing with comfort, I guess, for lack of a better word. I mean, what's the opposite of adversity? That's what the offense is right now. And Pat Narduzzi said it. You heard me ask Nate Peterman, and he agreed too. That's the next step for this offense. I think there are the things that they're doing. There's signs you can see with this offense that are encouraging. And we'll talk about this in a second, and I'm sure we'll talk about it on Thursday on the Panther Lair Show here on Triple Live Radio. There are things that are encouraging with this offense. I really believe that. The thing they need to do next, I mean, they need to play a full game. First of all, they need to play four quarters of solid football, of good football start to finish, and no more of this inconsistent stuff that they've been doing that is really, I mean, it's put them in these positions where two teams that they pretty much dominated start to finish end up being within a score of coming back and either tying or winning, as Virginia Tech was and as Virginia was. I mean, both of those teams were within one score of either winning the game in the case of Virginia Tech, or tying the game in the case of Virginia. And the reason why is not because the defense kept letting them back into the game, it's because the offense couldn't put the game away. And that's the next step for this group. That's the thing they really need to do, that if they can do, if they can find a way to take that next step and do it consistently and be consistent about it, and it's not just in the fourth quarter. I mean, a few more touchdowns in the second and third, and it doesn't matter if you can hold on to the ball in the fourth quarter or not. But if you're going to be in a one-score game in the fourth quarter, then you need to be able to hold the ball. You need to be able to move the ball. You need to be able to get first downs. And that's what their offense has failed to do in the last two games. And that's the next step for this offense. That's what this offense needs to focus on. And I'm sure they work on the four-minute drill all the time in practice, but they need to work on it more. And it probably just stems from being more effective on offense overall. I mean, if you can get consistent to the point where you're playing, you know, pretty effectively, and you're pretty successful on offense quarters 1 through 3, I'm guessing that you'll probably be pretty effective in quarter number 4. And this brings me to my next point about Nate Peterman and about this offense, because it's so schizophrenic for Pitt fans, and you can see it if you watching sporting events and looking at Twitter at the same time will drive you absolutely insane. I stopped looking at Twitter during Steeler games because I can't take it. I can't listen to it. I can't watch a game and read this stuff, read this constant, instant reaction, spur of the moment. I'll make a broad declaration about the state of the world after watching one snap. I can't take it. I can't stand it. And I have to have Twitter open during pick games because it's part of my job. I mean, I feel like it's part of my professional responsibility to tweet. You know, sometimes they're fart jokes, but I mean, they're still tweets, right? I mean, that's what you got to do during game is tweet. And so, you know, I can't get away from it during pick games. And it'll drive you absolutely bonkers to read this stuff because you see whatever you see on Twitter, there's just so much, just these, I use the phrase, it's broad declarations. Of I know exactly what this team or this offense or this player is based on the last play that I just saw. Well, that's stupid. That's insane. You don't know. I can classically remember. I'm not even going to get into examples because inevitably someone that I'm going to cite as an example might be listening to this podcast and be like, hey, I said that. Screw you, pal. But I mean, you know, you see it, a team gives up a touchdown on the first drive. Oh, their defense is terrible. This coaching staff, they're never going to get it figured out. These players are never going to. And then they'll pitch a shutout the rest of the game. And that's the way it was on. And then all of a sudden at the end of the game, oh, this defense, see, I really had a feeling that they were coming around. Give me a break. Because in the first quarter, you were writing them off. But instead of waiting for 60 minutes or a couple of games to render your judgments and broad declarations about what a team is or will be, you just either, you know, you either crown them or you know, damn them after each play. And so that was the case, you know, on Saturday in the Virginia game when Pitt's up 17-3 in the first quarter. So Jim Chaney, this is a great hire. See, he really knows what he's doing. He's really got his play calling together. He's calling a great game. Well, by the end of the game, he's a terrible play caller again. Come on. I mean, yeah, maybe his play calling changed over the course of the game. Maybe he became an idiot over the course of the game. I don't know. But, I mean, come on. What we're really seeing, you're not seeing the, you know, changing philosophies of Jim Chaney or, you know, anything like that. What you're really seeing is an offense that is still growing and it's still developing. And I came up with this analogy or this metaphor or comparison on Twitter, actually, is where I put it forward on Saturday after the game while kind of discussing the offense and Jim Chaney and Nate Peterman with a few other you know, with some Pitt fans and stuff that I regularly interact with, pretty smart guys and stuff. And the analogy I came up with is potty training. And if you've ever potty trained a little one, a little toddler or whatever, you'll know what I'm talking about here. You might not right now. You might be like, what the hell are you saying? Potty training? But hear me out. I've got a three-year-old. My wife and I are still in the process, and we've been in the process for quite a long time of trying to convince him that it's better to do his business in the proper place rather than his pants. And what you find when you're potty training a toddler is that it's very much not a linear experience. It's not all progress. There are days when you think, wow, we've really turned the corner. There are hours when you think, boy, we've really turned the corner. There are moments when you think, boy, we've really turned the corner. And inevitably, later that hour, later that day, later that week, you will find that you did not turn the corner. And this process goes on for quite some time until eventually I think you reach a point where you look back and say, well, you know, we really turned a corner a couple weeks ago. We didn't realize it at the time, but we turned a corner a couple weeks ago. Because it's always steps forward and steps back. It's not just every day is an improvement upon the last. And I think that's the case with this Pitt football team, with this offense, I should say, is that not every play, not every quarter, not every half, not every game is an improvement upon the last. There are moments when it works and there are moments when it fails. And that doesn't mean that Peterman sucks. That doesn't mean that Chaney sucks. That doesn't mean the offensive line sucks. All it means is that it's a work in progress, that there are bumps and farts and hiccups along the way. I've said fart twice in this podcast already, now three times. But there are bumps along the way. There are hiccups along the way. And what that means to me is, I mean, how I choose to look at it, ever the eternal optimist that I am, how I choose to look at it is that there are moments where it works. And those moments where it works are the things that the team, from the offensive coordinator, the head coach, down to the quarterback, the offensive line, and the skill players, there are things. Those are the things they can build on. And as long as you've got signs of things working, as long as you've got those indications that things can work well when they do what they're supposed to do, And I don't mean when the players do what they're supposed to do. When everything comes together and goes the way it's supposed to go, when the right play is called and it's executed properly and it's been coached properly, this offense can be pretty good. And you say, well, of course, idiot. Anybody who's been, you know, who does what they've been coached to do and the right play is called, they're going to do good. No, what I'm saying is that I think there's good enough talent on this offense that if the right play is called and they've been coached to execute it properly and they do execute it properly, they have enough talent on this offense to make it work and be pretty good. Okay. I think my personal opinion is what I've seen out of Nate Peterman so far when he's been good is encouraging enough to think that he can be really good and lead this offense. I think the running backs, Quadri Olsen and Chris James, are not James Conner, and they're not going to be James Conner, but I think they can be pretty damn good in their own right. And we've seen each of them make some pretty impressive plays. And when you see some of the plays that they made, it shows you that they're capable of making those plays, which means it can happen again if things are done properly. Tyler Boyd is obviously Tyler Boyd, and I've got a certain amount of optimism in the wide receivers around him. I think Dontez Ford showed you a little bit on Saturday against Virginia that he can be pretty good. That he can do some pretty good things, particularly after the catch. He's a tough player. I mean, he was dragging Virginia players for a couple extra yards on each of his three receptions. It feels that way, at least. The tight ends, obviously. Oh, the receivers. The one other thing I do have to say is that, and I wanted to mention this just kind of briefly as we were talking about the offense. Jester Wea, I mean, God love him, man, but I don't know. You've got 2 weeks in a row now where there are plays he should have made. Certainly one would have been a touchdown against Virginia. He was in the end zone and the ball is in his hands. The other one, it's on his fingertips against Virginia Tech. It's not an easy catch, but it's a catch that a Division I wide receiver, a guy who's in the position that he's in right now where he's the primary number three receiver, a player who is of that caliber, or a player in that position should be of the caliber where he makes that catch and perhaps is a touchdown in that situation. I mean, that's two in 2 weeks, and it's not a new development with him. The book on him has always been, since he arrived as a freshman, great speed, great athleticism, no hands, and just not a very reliable pass catcher. And thus far in his career, on the limited opportunities he's gotten, he's not really disproven that. He did catch a pass at Virginia Tech, but it was overturned by a substitution or formation penalty or whatever it was. So, I hate to, I'm not giving up on a guy. He's only a redshirt sophomore. He's got a couple more years before his eligibility expires. But I think that experiment, for the time being, probably should about run its course. I think you've got. I'll tell you that Elijah Zeiss and Zach Challingsworth both catch that touchdown pass against Virginia 9 times out of 10 each guy. I'm pretty confident about that because that I just, from what I've seen of each of those guys in practice over the last 2 years, I have more faith in their ability to catch that pass than Jester Wea. And that wasn't a play where his speed was the major factor in it. That was a play where he ran a good route and got open in the end zone, and his quarterback put the ball right there for him to catch, and he dropped it. So, Pat Narduzzi said we got to get him, he needs to keep building his confidence up. Maybe Pat Narduzzi joked, maybe he's saving it for Virginia, saving it for Atlanta when they play at Georgia Tech next week. I mean, that's funny to Pat Narduzzi, but that's 7 points you just lost there, pal, in a game that you only won by 7. In a game, we keep talking about how the offense needed to close it out in the fourth quarter. Well, maybe you catch that touchdown, or you don't fumble at the goal line, you don't snap it over your quarterback's head, and maybe it's not a one-score game in the fourth quarter. That play in the end zone was a big play, and not necessarily one to be joked about. But I digress. This offense, coming back to it, I wanted to talk about that topic just real briefly. But coming back to this offense, though, I am bullish on it. And moving on, as I talked about the quarterback, the running backs, the receivers, the tight ends, we've seen, everyone's been clamoring for the tight ends for years, and you see what they can do. They've shown it this season because they've been used, and they've been used rather heavily, at least by comparison to previous years, and they've made it pay off. Scott Orndorff and JP Holtz, I think, have 5 of the 7 passing touchdowns Pitt's recorded this season. Yeah, they're getting used, and they're making it work. And the offensive line, I think they played better against Virginia than they did against Virginia Tech. The only sack they gave up was the the kind of goofy sack fumble return for a touchdown. But that was the only sack they allowed. They did relatively well with the run. I think they protected Nate Peterman well enough that he had time to make plays. He didn't always make those plays, and his receivers didn't always make the plays for him. But overall, I think the offensive line played well. I think there are reasons to be bullish on this offense. To make a long story short, while failing to do so because I've made it very long already as it is, there are reasons to be bullish on this offense because they've shown what it can be when it works. They've shown what it can do when it does what it's supposed to do, and they've got the talent to do those things, I think, on a consistent basis. They've just got to find a way to reach that consistency. They've just got to find a way to be effective on a regular basis. And because if they do, I think they've got the horses to run it. They've got the players to make plays. All right, lots of talk about the offense there. That's not the only storyline to come out of this game. Obviously, the other side of the ball is pretty significant and pretty important. We need to talk about that. So when we come back, we're going to flip our focus to defense. We'll get our three key stats and our good, the bad, and the ugly in, and talk more about this game, Pitt 26-19 win over Virginia. This is the Panther Lair postgame here on Triple Live Radio. Welcome back to the Panther Lair postgame, Triple Live Radio, Chris Peek, publisher, PantherLair.com. Just real quick about the website, you know it, Panther-Lair.com, the most comprehensive source of Pitt sports news on the internet, football, basketball, and recruiting. We have it all covered for you at PantherLair.com. And if you go to the front page this morning or at any time, we've got all three of those things going pretty strong right now. Some good recruiting coverage out of the weekend. Pitt had a lot of recruits at the game against Virginia. I was hoping to get to that, but we're not going to have time today, I don't think. So we'll have to talk about that on the Panther Lair show on Thursday. Some of the recruits who were in town for the game. Pretty notable tight end transfer that I think Pitt is going to have a good shot at landing. But we'll talk about that on the Panther Lair show because we running short on time here with the postgame. I want to get to some talk about the defense. But there is some basketball coverage there, some basketball recruiting coverage on the front page. Panther-Lair.com is a place you definitely want to check out if you are a Pitt fan. If you don't know it already, you should definitely know it very soon. The sooner, the better. All right, flipping over to the defense, another impressive performance. They gave up more yards in this game. Of course, I don't know if this win over Virginia, I don't think I expected them to go for 100 yards of total offense and 9 rushing yards again, as they did against Virginia Tech. Virginia finished with 348 total, 139 on the ground. You know, it's interesting. Virginia Tech put up 350 and 200, I think, on the ground in their win over NC State on Friday night. So, you know, early in that game, Virginia Tech's offense looked pretty bad. And I thought, well, this is not speaking highly of Pitt's defense, which we were all giving so much props to after their big performance against Virginia Tech. Once the Hokies offense looked terrible against NC State early on, they said, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't get too excited about Pitt's defense. But then the Hokies turned it on and ended up winning the game with a pretty strong offensive performance, which makes Pitt's defense look all that much better. So not quite as dominant by the statistics against Virginia as they were against Virginia Tech. But here again, you've got a situation where Pitt's defense didn't give up an offensive touchdown until the fourth quarter. Less than 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter was the first offensive touchdown the defense allowed. And it was kind of the same way with the Youngstown State game. They gave up a bunch of points, but they didn't really give up any long sustained drives until late in the game. And that was the case on Saturday. It was another really impressive defensive performance. The two guys who stand out, and you gotta give them credit, because when guys have been sort of ripped almost mercilessly by a fan base, you know, they're the perennial whipping boys, they're the punching bags, and they end up playing like they have been, it's hard to not give them some props. And Micah Prayer, Matt Galambos, they deserve it. Another pair of strong games for those guys. They both had big games at Virginia Tech. And then on Saturday, Mike Caprera, 5 tackles, 4 solo, 1 sack, 2 tackles for loss, and of course the safety, Galambos, 5 tackles, 2 sacks, obviously 2 tackles for loss, and then a 51-yard interception return. somebody started the hashtag, well, somebody tweeted Galambos Island. I tried to get the hashtag going. It wouldn't get going, but maybe he'll get another pick and we can go to that hashtag again in the future. But these two guys are just playing really well. Galambos, you know, for as much criticism as he's taken from the fans, just really has played well for this defense this season. In the last two games, he hasn't really been replaced at all. You know, Quentin Virginis was talked about as he was going to get more snaps, and fans wanted to see him replace Galambos, and it seemed like the coaching staff was leaning that way. The last two games, I don't think Virginis has seen a single snap at middle linebacker. Meanwhile, Galambos has played really well. He had a couple of sacks at Virginia Tech. I'm trying to get this defensive stat sheet up right here. Yeah, he had a sack at Virginia Tech. He's now got like six on the season, I think it is. Lost my note sheet here that I had with that written down. But what I do know, and this is one of my three key stats, because this is just it's getting almost silly. But last season, Pitt linebackers had a total of six sacks in the whole season. Six. For the whole linebacker group. And as I mentioned this stat last week because I felt like it needed to be mentioned, and it's a pretty notable stat. Six sacks for the linebackers last season, and that included Nicholas Grigsby, who kind of played linebacker but kind of didn't play linebacker. Well, this year, the linebackers combined have 9.5 sacks through five games. Six sacks last season through 13 games, 9.5 through five games. This is why Pitt's defense has 21 sacks through five games when they only had 19 last year. It's because the linebackers are much more active. They're getting a lot more out of their defensive ends. There's no question. Juan Price's addition. When people talk about, you know, this is basically the same defensive personnel that Pitt had a year ago, well, you forget about the addition of Juan Price. Now, I don't know if Juan Price changes the fortunes of Pitt's defense in 2014, but he certainly has had an impact on the 2015 defense. And I think you've seen it big time over the last 2 weeks. He's had a huge impact. And you saw it when he didn't play in the second half at Iowa. You saw the kind of impact his absence had. When you talk about guys who are valuable, well, when you take him out of the lineup, what happens? When they took Juan Price out of the lineup against Iowa, bad things happened. Or at least not as many good things happened. And so personnel is not entirely the same. Defensive ends are generating their fair share of sacks. But the linebackers and what the linebackers have done in getting sacks this season, it to me is the big difference. I mean, 9.5 sacks through five games when they only had six last year, all season. That's pretty significant stat. And the fact that Galambos and Mike Caprera are right there putting up those numbers, three sacks between those two guys in this last game, the Virginia game. Caprera had one, Galambos had two. That's pretty significant. And I think, you know, even if you've been down on those two guys, I would think you've got the, I don't know, good sense to appreciate how they've played, particularly the last couple of games. My next key stat, Jordan Whitehead, leading in tackles in the Virginia game, 12 total tackles for Whitehead. He's now started four games this season. The freshman safety from Central Valley, Jordan Whitehead, has started four games this season. He's been Pitt's leading tackler in three of those four games. He had 16 tackles at Akron. I think he had six at Iowa, and he had 12 at against Virginia. And he was the leading tackler each of those three times. He's Pitt's leading tackler on the season. And some people have said, well, it's not a good thing to have a safety be your leading tackler. And I sort of agree with that. I've said that in the past. I can remember when Tez Morris was Pitt's leading tackler, or one of these safeties was the leading tackler, and I said, well, that's not necessarily a good thing because these plays are getting made at the not even the second level, but the third level. That the plays are getting through the defensive line and past the linebackers, and the safety has to clean up the mess. And a lot of times that's true, but it depends kind of on how you play, because the way Pitt's defense works and uses its safeties and lines up its safeties, they're not exactly lining up in the third level. Pitt safeties line up close to the line of scrimmage. They really do. Watch where they are on most plays. And so they're right there in the mix. Pat Narduzzi has sort of jokingly said in the past they put nine guys in the box, but it's not really a joke. They really do. The safeties are right up there with the linebackers. And so for a safety like Whitehead to lead the team in tackles doesn't necessarily mean that a bunch of plays are getting made 8 yards downfield. He's coming up and he's sticking, guys, and he's been a revelation. I think we all expect him to be the next, Darrell Revis, I guess. But what he's ended up being is a pretty hard-hitting safety who hasn't really had his chance to get his hands on the football yet. But when he does, but he's going to. He's going to. I'll say that. He's going to. And when he does, it could be pretty exciting. And then my third key stat coming out of this game, the tight ends, J.P. Holtz and Scott Orndorff, four catches for 99 yards and a touchdown in this win over Virginia on the season. I believe they've combined for 15 catches and five touchdowns between the two of them. Pitt has, I think, seven passing touchdowns all season, and Holtz and Orndorff have combined to catch five of them. This is a major change in Pitt's offense, and it's not a change in the direction of the offense. Don't mistake this for being Jim Chaney wants to use the tight ends and Paul Chryst never did. Paul Chryst would have been more than happy to throw the ball to J.P. Holtz and Scott Orndorff. But there's a difference between calling and designing the plays and executing the plays. And some of those throws were there. You know it. You saw them. You saw when J.P. Holtz was open. You saw when Scott Orndorff was open. And the throws weren't made. The throws are being made this year. That's the basic difference, is that the throws are being made this year. Right, that's the three key stats. Let's jump through quick the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good out of this game on Saturday, this 26-19 win over Virginia, like I just mentioned, the tight ends, I think, were really good. Four catches for 99 yards and a touchdown for Scott Orndorff and J.P. Holtz combined. It's hard to find any issue with that. The defense, and we haven't even mentioned this fact or this part of the whole equation when talking about the defense in this game. They played without Nicholas Grigsby, arguably, and this is a debate we could have, maybe their best defensive player, certainly one of the guys who's playing as well as anyone on that defense this season, suffered a neck injury on the first defensive play of the game for Pitt and didn't return. And so Mike Caprera is out there all the time at that star linebacker position. Matt Steinbeck gets the walk-on transfer from Bucknell, originally from North Allegheny, gets some time out there. Jamal Davis is playing in the third down package, replacing Grigsby. I mean, he is one of their best players, maybe their best player, all around on defense. And he doesn't even play, and the defense still had a really good game and pretty much dominated Virginia. Now, Virginia's not a very good offense, but it still takes something to shut them down. A bad defense will lose to a bad offense, right? Or a bad offense will be able to look a little bit better if they're playing really a bad defense, and that's not the case. Pitt's defense is doing to bad offenses what a good defense should do. Now, that's the good. The bad, I talked about this, it's finishing games. And not finishing games on defense. The defense is doing what it's supposed to do at the end of the games. It's the offense. The offense needs to do better at the end of the games. They know it. You know it. I know it. That's the biggest thing this offense needs to improve on going forward, which ultimately stems from just being more consistent overall. They need to be more consistent on quarters 1-3. If they do, they'll score more and be in less of those one-score situations in the fourth quarter. But if they're more effective in quarters 1-3, chances are they'll be more effective in quarter 4. So if they are in a one-score situation, a four-minute drive situation, they'll do better than they have in the last two games. That's what they need to focus on. That's where they need to improve. That was the bad out of this game. The fact that Virginia still had a very legitimate chance to win because the offense couldn't put the game away. And then the ugly from this game, the bad snaps. Two snaps over Nate Peterman's head. One snap under center that he bobbled, fumbled. I don't know whose fault that was, but Artie Rowell did not have a good game. I mean, snapping it over his quarterback's head twice. You can't do that. That's unacceptable. That's against the rules. It's something we haven't seen, and I think if you're Pitt, you hope you don't see it again, but it was certainly ugly. All right, we're all out of time. We got to get run in here. Another good time here on the Panther Lair postgame. Tune in Thursday afternoon, 2 p.m. for the Panther Lair show. We'll be talking more about this game, getting ready for Pitt, Georgia Tech, talking a little bit about recruiting. We got to touch on some topics there. And then we'll be back on Monday morning, 9 a.m. to review Pitt at Georgia Tech on Saturday afternoon. That game Saturday afternoon in Atlanta, 12:30 p.m. kickoff. Another big one for Pitt. Georgia Tech is reeling. We'll see how the Panthers do against a team that's 0-4 in the ACC, or 0-3. I guess it is, in the ACC right now on a four-game losing streak. So big chance for Pitt to get a big one and improve to 3-0, win three ACC games in a row for the first time in the team's history in the conference. All right, until Thursday, 2 p.m. Panther Lair show. I'm Chris Peek. Stay tuned to the website panther-lair.com. This is the Panther Lair postgame on Triple Live Radio.